breaking news. Strange black pyramid UFO ships over every major city on the Earth. People are exhilarated and scared. Reptilian strange creatures are beaming down. My God, they're beaming me up with them. Don't put that probe there. Don't put that probe there. Don't put the... Listen to the Church of Mabus radio show at 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights with host Jeffrey Pritchard, bringing you The High Strange. Visit www.churchofmabusradio.com. That's www.churchofmabusradio.com.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and today is July 3rd, 2012. Tonight is a whole new conversation about fracking for oil and gas, but before we get started, we're going to start off with some information and reminders. We are still collecting recipes for our cookbook project, and you can email them to me at GiaScott@ExogenyNetwork.com. We want everybody to send in their favorite recipes to reflect the world that we live and cook in today, so don't wait. Get them emailed off to me. Now, for tonight's program, just like all programs, I would love to have the audience's input with questions and comments. So if you've joined the virtual auditorium in Palpok, you can send them to me via text. And if you're listening through one of the other venues, you can email them to me at GiaScott@ExogenyNetwork.com. This is true even if you're listening in on a rebroadcast or a podcast of the program, so please, if you enjoyed it, drop me a quick email and tell me so. If you didn't enjoy it, well, drop me an email anyhow and tell me why. Now, while we're talking about email, I really do appreciate all the listeners that write in to tell me what they think about the program and let us know who they want to listen to next. So even though I may have, like, psychic tendencies, there's no way I can bring the things that really interest you, the audience member, to the program without your help. So don't wait. Sometimes it takes me a little while to get the person, expert, author, singer, drummer, or whoever onto the program. Send me an email and let me know who you want to hear from and what topics help. You can send it once again to GiaScott@ExogenyNetwork.com. Now, I usually don't bring up the news, but today is an exception. Today we lost an American icon, Andy Griffith. Now, who doesn't love the sheriff in his little town of Mayberry? The world is a little less friendly without Andy's presence, it seems. And even now, as Greg and I are hunting for our new home, part of me hopes that just around the next bend in the road, we're going to find Mayberry. And life will be just that simple, right? But moving right along, we are now going to have a chance to hear from our guests. We have three people joining us tonight. We have Ed Hashbarger, Steve Navatani, and if I hopefully I got that right, and Yuri Gorby. Ed, let's start off with you, and you want to introduce yourself to the audience.
Yes, my name is Ed Hashbarger. A little bit about myself. I am a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. I'm a retired police officer. I am a farmer with a small farm. I'm a Catholic, and I'm a conservative Republican. And I got the whole process through the gas and oil companies coming into our area here in Ohio. I was one of those drill baby drill individuals. Looking to make a buck for myself, and my family. If I can do it through gas drilling, I was going to do it. I attended a meeting here back in February of 2011, and it was put on by the oil and gas industry to kind of give us an idea of what we're going to experience and how to do a proper lease and what all we need to do to make our money. And I was at this meeting just gathering information like other farmers were there, and there was a gentleman there from one of the major oil and gas companies, Chesapeake Gas. He was there talking about the gas leases and how it works. And I decided just to pose a question to him. And the question went somewhere like this. It said, or I said, for the people who aren't interested in participating in the gas drilling process and don't want to be bothered with it, what happens exactly? And the gentleman told me that for the people who don't want to participate, we'll take it from you anyways. And at that particular time, a gentleman from O stepped up, which is the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and just explained to him that, or explained to the audience that your mineral rights can be taken from you through a law called Mandatory Pooling in the State of Ohio, 150927. And that kind of set me off from that point on. From that point on, I decided that, by God, this is America. And companies aren't going to come in here and take a citizen. Even though I was for gas drilling at the beginning, nobody has a right to come in and take another person's land or their minerals for private profit. And it was wrong. So I decided at that point to, before I leased my minerals, to look into the oil and gas industry as I would if I was going to investigate a case. And I started looking into the oil and gas industry, and my eyes were completely open to the whole process of how it's done, to the environmental impacts and what happens to the environment, what happens as far as mortgages, what happens as far as I can be sued as a landowner when I lease and other people don't lease. It was amazing to me, and especially the damage it does to the environment, to our air, to our water. It was incredible. So from that point on, I decided to be an advocate against gas drilling. I'm not for gas drilling. I believe it's dangerous. It's harmful to the environment. And during my endeavors and through my investigations, I was able to meet some wonderful people. A lot of people would call them liberals or Democrats, I guess. So this Republican had his eyes open to the whole other side of the game here. And what I learned is, whether we're Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative, if we're religious or not religious, by God, this has to do with our environment. This has to do with our civil liberties, our constitutional freedoms. Nobody should be able to come in and take what an individual is and give it to somebody else. And our government facilitates that. So during my endeavors, I was fortunate enough to be offered a position on another radio station, which is www.awakenradio.net. Donna Devane offered me a hosting job, and I decided to host a show called Black America. And this radio program will air every Wednesday from 6 to 8. And we're going to discuss topics. We're going to explore topics that have changed America as we know it. We'll investigate the real agenda of big business and see how they, through lobbying, have influenced our politicians. In addition, we'll reveal how our United States government is slowly stripping the American people of their God-given liberties, such as increased gun control laws, smoking laws, weight control laws, and most importantly, the seizing of private property and mineral rights. We'll also look into the oil and gas industry and how, through hydrofracking or frack strength, has a negative impact on our environment. How they've come out and lie to landowners or don't tell them the truth about all the environmental impacts, and how you can be sued, how you can lose your homeowner's insurance. There's a whole list of things. John, on South America, we'll feature guests. Expect to deal with the patriots who are concerned with the direction our country's going. So I encourage all the people out there to listen to me on Wednesdays, listen to what I have to say. I encourage audience participation, and together we'll lead the struggle, America.
Okay, Steve, we're going to put you in the hot seat next. Do you want to introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure, I'm Steve Novotny. I'm a radio journalist here in Wheeling, West Virginia on AM 1600 WKKX. I've been covering the oil and gas industries for the last 4 years because we are here in the sweet spot of the Marcellus Shale. And I think that a whole heck of a lot of people concentrate a little bit too much on the word fracking and not what it really means to live in the middle of this. I agree with a lot of what Ed just said, you know, about the politicians, about this and about that, and why this industry is allowed to do what it's allowed to do. Ed mentioned forced pulling over in Ohio. Thank goodness here in West Virginia, our legislature was smart enough to forbid forced pulling, so those American rights, those private property rights, are not stripped from anybody that lives at least on this side of the Ohio River. John Kasich and the Republican majorities in Ohio didn't decide the same. There's a lot of legal issues, a lot of slate of issues that we've covered, and we've also covered the disappearance of waterfalls, creeks, and streams. You live in the middle of it. It's not just about fracking, ladies and gentlemen. When you live in the middle of it, it's about enduring it.
Okay, and Yuri Gorby, you're next.
Hello, hi. My name is Yuri Gorby. I am a research scientist. My background is in the biogeochemical processes that affect the fate and transport of things like uranium and plutonium and, you know, contaminants in subsurface groundwaters. I was a scientist with the U.S. Department of Energy for, I think, 16 years at a place called the Hanford site out in Richland, Washington. And there was a major site for the production of plutonium and the enrichment of uranium for the bombs and the Cold War effort. During that process, there was a huge contamination to the subsurface out there, but this is a pretty desolate area. It's a semi-arid environment, and there is a big river that runs through there, but not many people, and it was a secret government operation as part of the Manhattan Project. But they did have the effect of having those contaminants spread and contaminating people, those that call the downwinders out there. You might have heard about those, and as part of all of that war effort for the production of those materials, they were contaminated, and large areas of the United States were contaminated during that activity. And still, the Hanford site remains one of the more contaminated national laboratories, but not the only one. And they're still trying to follow up on monitoring of that site, but the possible remediation of that site. There was a series of different well tanks, and just to get to the point, everything, our scientific team that I was involved with for those 16 years or so out there was focused on how do we really monitor and perhaps clean up or at least protect public from the exposure of these contaminants that we've released into the subsurface there. And, I mean, that was a long-term effort, and it goes on. But now, you know, with that, we have developed a core group of scientific community within the United States and with international colleagues, both in national lab systems and in to address the science behind these integrated subsurface processes that are involved in the migration of contaminants and in these complex. We have complex models built, predictive models for fate and transport of contaminants. But what was remarkable to me is that just recently when I brought this topic of hydraulic fracturing up in one of our meetings is that very few people are actually informed about what it was. Now, you have to remember, these are similar processes. I mean, they're related. My abilities, although I haven't studied in Marcellus Shale or any of that shale environment, my knowledge of the bacterial processes, the geochemical processes, and the hydrological processes, that's something that I was fortunate enough to be trained using taxpayers' dollars through that national lab system, and I really commend the Basic Science Corps within the Department of Energy for not just my opportunity, but a whole community of the scientists, and we know each other quite well. Yet now we have no funding for that type of research to address these type of issues. It simply is not there, and that's kind of, you know, quizzical, at least to me. So, but in any case, with my knowledge of this, I can give at least a cursory an assessment of what's going on in the Marcellus region not only because I have those abilities, but I'm also from West Virginia. I'm from Bethlehem, West Virginia. I grew up in the woods and swam in the creeks around that region and was interested in science because of those experiences, you know, ecosystems and system science. And so, you know, that kind of what, now to see what was going on back there, and I just became aware of it in December of this year when I gave a talk at Duquesne University at the invitation of my friend and colleague, John Stoltz. And he took me down and took me around and showed me some of these sites. And again, it's not just the frack sites or the fracturing, it's all of the related activities, the truck traffic, the plumes that we see of silicon sand. This is crystalline silicon sand that if you breathe it in causes silicosis. The massive use of incredible amounts of water intentionally contaminated, injected into these groundwaters, and then further contaminated by the exposure in the formation to things like benzene, toluene, uranium, radon, that then come up and then are part of the waste stream that has to be dealt with net, without regulations. It seems to me that this is that the nuclear effort, Cold War effort all over again, but this isn't a national effort to defend against an enemy. This is a business strategy that is affecting us, the people of our own country, without any regard for the acute, and what I'm more interested in, the long-term health effects of not only the environment, but the people that live in that region. So I am, I'm quite interested in this, and I hope to be able to devote the rest of, or a portion of the rest of my career to addressing some of these issues.
Okay, well, you know, where the topic tonight is about fracking, I'm not a geologist, I'm not an oil person, and, you know, to try and inform you on everything, you know, anybody who uses the internet knows you can be overwhelmed by information, which may or may not be relevant to what you're really looking for. So I thought, okay, you know, to sort of make this process of educating myself a little bit quicker, I called an oil man to explain to me what happened with fracking. So I'm going to relay this in sort of a capsulized form. Now, the information he gave me was he did qualify that he only had experience in the western United States in fairly arid environment. There was going to be some difference in geology and all sorts of other things. But during the process of fracking, there is a well drilled, and it has a steel tube put in it, and then there is a type of cement that's put around it. And obviously, there can be a great deal of variation what type of rock and so forth, where, how deep and so forth the gas or oil is located. In order to remove the gas or oil, it has to be put under pressure, which is why they're pumping in the hydraulic liquid. The fracturing occurs when they blow holes through this steel tube and the cement to fracture the rock and allow the gas to escape into there, and then they pump in something to replace it. He said typically they were using water with soap, or they use non-food grade additives such as pork gum and so forth that were used. And normally, in his experience with the companies he worked for, it was a closed-loop system. They were supposed to recover everything they pumped into the ground. But he said sometimes things go wrong. Somebody doesn't do their job right. And he relayed a case to me that occurred in New Mexico probably about 20 years, where a man had a well near his house, and they fracked the well the day before. And the next morning he got up, and he had coffee perking, and he opened up his faucet to get some water out of it. And unfortunately, the gas had gone into his water well and then was pumped in through his water pump system. And when he opened the spigot, the natural gas came out, and his house burnt down. Now, unfortunately, nobody was injured or killed, but his house was a complete loss, and they paid a lot to fix the situation there. So things can go wrong. People can make mistakes. The unknown happens, and so forth and so on. And, you know, I'd heard a lot about people claiming that earthquakes in the East Coast have been caused by fracking that was going on. And he said that as far as he knew, there was no way that fracking could cause an actual earthquake, and that it was counterproductive to the oil industry's goals because earthquakes shut down oil wells and caused damage to the well system. So he wasn't sure how that would be related. Now, if you guys have anything to qualify or change what I've said, but I wanted the people in general to understand exactly what we're talking about. In addition, he said these fractures in the rock that they were creating were usually the width of a single grain of sand and were rarely any wider than 3 grains of sand. They're also not that extensive, although they could do it where it was either vertical fracturing or horizontal fracturing. In the oil fields where you see literally, and I've seen it in West Texas and whatnot, it's literally, as far as you can see, there's a well every 60 yards or so. And you smell nothing but oil there. I mean, it stinks. I don't know anybody who thinks that petroleum smells good, but it actually smells bad, to me at least. Do you guys have anything to add to it?
Yeah, I would love to respond to some of that stuff because, again, the oil and gas industry is apparently lying in many cases here. First of all, he is right. The formations and stuff are different here in the East Coast. I can speak especially here about the Ohio area, and I'm sure Steve can probably back me up on some of this information. Usually what we're dealing with here is we're dealing with the Marcellus Shale and Utica Shale, mostly the Utica Shale here in Ohio, which is a deeper rock formation located approximately 7,000 feet deep. The oil and gas industry is dealing with those here, and the encasement process that they're using here in Ohio is a better encasing process. They're supposed to encase the wells below the water table, but what they're not telling people and what people aren't realizing is the fault lines in our area adversely affect the gas drilling process, because fault lines, after speaking to several geologists, one at Ohio State, one at Akron, and also one at Youngstown, they explained that fault lines here in our area go miles deep and they come all the way to the surface. And when they go down and they drill and they start to go horizontal to frack a well, and keep in mind that when they frack a well, that's one hole, and there's usually 6 holes per drill site, up to 8 holes per site. So for every rig platform that they put in, or area that they put in for a drill site, you have 6 holes. Each one of those holes uses up to 5 million gallons of water. Out of that 5 million gallons of water, roughly 50,000 gallons is chemicals. A lot of those chemicals, according to an index that I have here done on a health study, approximately, and Yuri could probably speak a little bit more about this, a total of 632 of these chemicals were reported in the products that were used that have a CAS number. And I'm sure Yuri could probably elaborate a little bit further on those CSA numbers. But those directly affect the body and the organs, like the kidneys, the brain, the liver, skin, eye, so on and so forth. But going back to his drilling process and what he's talking about here, another thing that didn't take into consideration in our area is the mine shafts and the underground mining that occurred here. Some of these mines, I have reports, go down 3,000 feet deep. So when they go down and they hit these mine shafts, and some of that fluid makes its way into there, and we've seen it in our area with the copper-colored looking water that makes its way up to the surface, that's from underground mines, and that's leaching out into our environment. So these chemicals that they're dumping in there with the fracking process is also making its way into these mine shafts, coming up to the surface and getting into our drinking spring. So, but I, you know, let the other people talk. I go into a whole section on how a drill site is set up, how many acres they usually use, how far they go out. Ohio's pretty unique in the sense that they post the permits online. We're able to not only get the permit, but we're also able to get the plat map to show the direction, how deep the well is, how wide the drill is, so on and so forth. So I'll let somebody else elaborate a little further, but I go in really depth on this.
Well, and there is relative. See, I think one thing we need to make sure that we remember is there are vast differences in the regulatory reform bills that have been passed in Ohio and West Virginia. On a well pad in West Virginia now, it's five wells are permitted to be drilled on each well pad, and there's a fee that that driller's got to pay per well pad. As far as the mines and everything that Ed did mention, I agree with that wholeheartedly, and I've asked everybody from senators to geologists to anybody who will listen that exact question. Nobody has a real good answer for me. And Ed, just north of where you are in Jefferson County, Ohio, don't forget that injections were drilled in the Youngstown area, and injection wells are permitted again in Ohio and West Virginia to be drilled as deep as 18,000 feet deep. There were a number of injection wells drilled a little bit north of Youngstown, and that resulted in 11 minor earthquakes. The EPA coming out and saying, hey, you guys are hitting faults that nobody knew were there. Maybe this isn't all that great of an idea. But Ohio Governor John Kasich ignored that and pretty much sided with capitalism in that certain situation. And again, we'll go to Uri because he's the science guy. Ed and I are just concerned citizens, and I happen to be a journalist doing my job.
Well, I want to talk. We'll talk a little about the seismic activity. Yeah, that's correct. I think that even your industry person that you called was correct. Fracking itself doesn't cause significant seismic releases. Those are minor ones. They are typically not felt from the surface, although it might be. But the big ones that are associated, the ones of 4.0 magnitude, the ones recorded, documented, confirmed by U.S. Geological Survey in Youngstown, Ohio, was a result of a deep injection of the waste fluids that need to be disposed of as part of this overall process. So if you want to get technical, yes, hydraulic fracturing itself doesn't cause these things. It is the disposal, the deep disposal of the waste that's generated as a process that does it. The same way that silica sand hydrofracking doesn't cause silicosis in people that live around the silica sand mines up in Wisconsin directly, yes, that's true, but the mining of that for that process, because 5% of the material being injected into these mines are crystalline silica sand of a particular size and a particular formation because it has good properties for suspension in the injection fluids. And so it can be injected deep into these formations and prop up those little fractures that are caused by the hydraulic pressure. And so that sand, though, is a causative agent of silicosis, and it's being spread around in the air, around, as you can follow these so-called sand cans around here, and you can just take a piece of it and pull it off the side of that truck and send it to me, and I'll show you by scanning electron microscopy that these are little particles of ground glass that are being dumped down into these wells. And some of that material comes shooting back up out of there, and you have dispersion. Oh, we see this nice misty. It just looks like water. That's not water. It has particles in it that will lacerate the linings of your lung. And this is being now, one of the things that needs to be addressed. Regarding the composition of the water, we know by the emission permits that need be or that are published in local papers to say on this site we're going to emit these amount of chemicals to the atmosphere per year, that in those that I read for the pad located around Wheeling, West Virginia, they were talking about 0.3 tons of formaldehyde. Now, that's formaldehyde right. Is the active ingredient in embalming fluid, and the release of that, it must suggest that it must be used as a biocide in these systems, which we know it is. It's included in their list of chemicals that may be included in their proprietary recipes.
Go ahead.
I was just going to go on that, with the composition of water, your contact with the industry was quite incorrect. The composition of those materials being injected in there, we know, are quite hazardous, and that is one of the reasons why it's so difficult to get the information about these are so that they can do health and risk assessments of the effects of these being released to environments. The casings, by their own admission, the industry's own admission, you'll have 50% failure rate of casings within 15 years. So 5% failure in an installation, 50%. Now we're talking if the Marcellus Shale receives 100,000 wells. Now we have failed casings once every 2 miles instead of once every mile and then the water resources there will not be protected from whatever is coming up out of those formations. So this is, those are the longer term effects that really need to be considered. And I think that I've covered most of the topics that you mentioned.
Well, I know that there's a lot of stuff that circulates as, you know, whether you want to call it urban myths or whatever. But I have heard stories about rural people in West Virginia having, after drilling for oil and gas products in their area starts, then their water wells are consistently filled with oil. You know, that when you let a glass of water sit overnight, you have this oily scum on it in the next morning. And, you know, that they've been told that, oh, it won't hurt you. You know, is that true? I mean, if you're seeing something like that from your well water, you know, I wouldn't drink it.
Gee, that's not true. No. I report on that stuff right here. I've not heard of that particular instance actually being true. What I have heard about is a gentleman down in Marshall County who is suing Chesapeake, not only because of contaminated well water, but also he says that Fish Creek is, and that is the name of it, Fish Creek, is contaminated. He says it's bubbling ever since the fracking process has taken place. I'm also familiar with a water contamination settlement between a Bradford, Pennsylvania individual, a family, over a water well contamination with Chesapeake. I understand that that was a $1.6 million settlement, but as far as oil substances being in the well water around here, I've not heard that or seen that documented by anything in the media around here.
I can say one thing on that. There is a particular type of bacterium. They're called metal oxidizing bacterium, and there's a number of them that will make that oily sheen on like water that's sitting still that has no oxygen in it, first of all, and it has things like iron or other metals that it can use as an electron donor. And they make this oily sheen. If you look at it in a microscope, it's actually bacteria of a particular type. But it's not the oil that's coming from that. So microbiologically, that's possible. But you can also see it just out in the field in cow, you know, where cows need a footprint. The next day, you'll see an oily sheen on it. Those are bacteria that are naturally occurring in that area. So, Steve, I would like to comment directly on your comment about Fish Creek, because that's exactly, those are my key down there. My dad's from Southern Hill over in Bristol County. My bones, they're born Fish Creek. We played there as kids, but they had a place up the hall right up on the front of the Fish Creek. And when it wasn't the fracking or anything like that that contaminated the wells, it was when they were drawing so much water in a creek, I think this was 3 or 4 years ago, that it ran dry on the downstream end of that. And so that was against policy. They wanted to be able to have better water resources. So during a 3-day well fire that was up on the hill distracting everyone, these folks dropped in two water withdrawal wells that are about 30 or 40 feet from the creek and started removing these millions of gallons and pumping them through that network of snaky black pipe that went all over the hillsides over the last couple of seasons. And when they pulled that water, it's like back flushing a sand filter for your pool or whatever, you know. It reversed the flow of the natural flow of those pristine waters that you could drink right out of their well, and it contaminated first with particles, and then they started smelling sulfide, and those were all natural processes. It's not related to fracking. Same thing, silicosis is not, you know, caused by fracking. It was caused from a massive withdrawal of water and the reverse of the natural flow of that aquifer. Now they have their own water. And because they didn't have any scientific data to show the water wells of all the people in that little valley there, they lost their water, and the company is not liable. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're referring to. And those are not isolated incidences. It's all over that hillside with slides coming down. There's five different slides where the water impoundments that were up on the tops of these hills were engineered or built by people inexperienced in that type of topography, and these are flowing down onto people's homes and blocking roads, and it is a nightmare down there. And these are, my cousins, and if they're listening, I just want to say hi to all of them.
Well, I'm sorry, Yuri, that you've had to endure some of the, that there have been well pad issues on the border of Marshall and Wetzel counties here in West Virginia. And again, big differences between Ohio and what the West Virginia legislature actually accomplished in the regulatory reform bill on gas. Now in West Virginia, all those well pads have to be proven to be engineered by engineers. Instead of somebody just going up on a hilltop and saying, you know what, this looks like good area, not anymore. That's got to be signed off by licensed engineers and things like that. Here in West Virginia, the same law was not included in the regulatory reform over in Ohio. And I'm sure that Ed has seen a lot of those hilltop and ridge-high well pads be constructed over in Jefferson County, just as we've seen in Marshall and Ohio counties here locally.
Well, my biggest concern in all this is just not actual water contamination. A lot of people feel that water contamination is the biggest problem, but I'm sure Yuri will agree with me here. My biggest concern is H2S, hydrogen sulfide. And I have many reports here pertaining to hydrogen sulfide leaks where people have died. In some of the health reports that I have, it states that people died just about instantly when coming in contact with the gas in our area. And another thing that concerns me is, you know, when I was talking about the fracking process here, and they didn't take into consideration the fault lines or the deep mine shafts or coal here. They also didn't take into consideration here our valleys. And when you're dealing with H2S gas, it's a heavy gas. And some of the reports that I have here state that, you know, that gas can linger for up to 18 hours in many cases. And Oklahoma, Texas, some of these other places where gas drilling has been going on for a while there, they have H2S gas issues. But when that gas comes up, it's in a flat area, it dissipates in that area. Winds come along and carry it out. But here, and Yuri can probably speak on to this further, and I'd like to get his opinion on it. If you have a drill site, like a lot of these are on hilltops, and they have a gas leak, that gas is going to settle like fog into the valley. And in these valleys here, in our area, at least in Jefferson County, and I'm sure it's the same way in West Virginia, you got a lot of streets and small towns and just little burbs that sit down in these valleys. And if you get a substantial gas leak that leaks down in there in the middle of the night, and usually these gas leaks take place, if they're not actually taking place during the actual drilling process, but after the drilling process is done and everybody's gone and the rig's down and they got the gas pumped up, or they may be producing it to put into tankers to be sent out or introducing it into a pipeline, but if one of these welds fail, or one of these valves failed like it did out in Colorado where 9 people died in their pajamas just trying to get to their vehicles, I can only imagine what would happen here in the middle of the night if you have an H2S leak in the middle of the night and it settles down into a small town or a small burb here or just a street that may have 30, 40 families living on it. I dread even hearing it, that, you know, the next morning people come in and a whole town's gone because H2S gas. And every report that I've read from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to the New York Times, all these, they talk about the dangers. Even the EPA, OSHA, all of them talk about the dangers of H2S gas. The Agency for Toxic Substance and Disease Registry gives a lengthy report on H2S gas and how deadly it is. And it just boggles my mind. It says hydrogen sulfide remains in the atmosphere up to 18 hours. That's a long time for a gas to be sitting in an area. And in Guernsey County in Ohio, a gas well operator died from inhaling H2S gas by bending down near a retainment pond that wasn't supposed to have any hydraulic fracturing fluid in it. He bent down to adjust the liner or something he was doing down there, and he was overwhelmed with the gas and died instantly. It just amazes me. And real quick, I wanted to go back real quick to talk about the earthquake issues. Steve and Yuri's right, but here in Ohio, we're kind of unique in the situation when it comes to injection wells, because Ohio's opened their arms to Pennsylvania and West Virginia and said, come on, bring all your fracking fluid waste here. We're going to put it down on our sites. Ohio's been going crazy putting in injection well sites to get rid of the wastewater. We have one here in Jefferson County. It's not fully functional as of yet, because what they like to do is they like to take old drill sites and upgrade them. Of course, I haven't been able to pull any permits on those and how it works, but for example, the one in Youngstown, and this is a concern when we just talked about how it affects our water and transfers. One of Columbia University's experts, Dr. Won Young Kim, okay, now keep in mind, this doctor is who ODNR brought in to investigate the earthquake issues because he specializes in earthquakes, said that the problem could arise if fluid moves through the ground and affects a weak fault, waiting to be triggered. He explained that underground waste slowly migrates and could cause issues miles away, adding to, and could persist for many times as the water travels and creeps down towards the fault. So here again, this gentleman talks about wastewater that's being injected. Now keep in mind, the casing process, at least here in Ohio, when they encase our wells, that encasing usually goes down roughly about 12 to 1,500 feet when they encase and encase the concrete out. And when they run that line down through to frack out from that point, they're telling you that there's no way that this water could make its way back to the surface. But yet here's this doctor here who specializes in earthquakes, explains how water moves through the earth in deep location. So it's making its way down through, finds a fault line, and triggers earthquakes, or it just works its way up to the surface. And to top that off, for everybody out there, if they could just picture in their mind here for 1 second, a geologist explained to me, he says, I'm going to explain to you something simple. He says, take a bucket and fill it halfway with water. Now, what I want you to do is spin that bucket in a circle. And he says, with the water, it gets all pushed to the side and the bottom of the bucket. He says, when we inject millions of gallons of water deep into the earth like that, the earth is spinning as it's going around our sun. Therefore, it's being the fluid is being forced back out to the surface. He says, who are we kidding to think that when we inject that down there, this water is not making its way up to the surface in other locations, and especially in our area, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, in this panhandle area, we have to deal with fault lines, we have to deal with underground mine shafts, and that's how our water is getting contaminated. And that ain't even the tip of the iceberg here. We're talking about methane, H2S gas, all these other different gases that are making their way to the surface due to gas drilling. I got reports all over the place here just in the last couple months where methane gas was found in 3 wells and 2 streams in Pennsylvania, where it's been found here in Ohio, where it's been found in Wetzel County in West Virginia. It just blows my mind, folks. It really does. And our politicians look the other way. If they don't see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, then and the problem is everybody here is looking for a quick payout, and they're not thinking about the long-term effects to our environment. I don't care how much money you get, you cannot drink it. You just can't do it.
Yeah, I think that really, I mean, this comes from just a lack of awareness about what's really happening and what will likely happen as the impacts are really realized. What Ed was talking about, hydrogen sulfide, other sulfur-based gases, those are quite toxic and quite corrosive. And those are produced by microorganisms naturally in that you find in these formations, and they generate this gas. And that is why one of the reasons why these high concentrations of so-called biocides like formaldehyde, glutaraldehyde are added to these systems, so that the organisms then, and these are a particular groups of organisms called sulfate-reducing bacteria, and when they encounter sulfate as an electron acceptor, they breathe it, and they reduce hydrogen sulfide gas. And so these chemical additives, these so-called biocides that they'll list there, those are to kill bacteria, specifically those... Sorry about that. Is that me?
No, that's me.
That was actually me just getting back on the line. So go ahead, continue.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, sorry. I was just going to, I'll just summarize it. The use of biocides are to kill back a participant, sulfate-reducing bacteria that can generate hydrogen sulfide and other sulfur compounds as part of their natural processes. Those are included in the injection fluids to knock back those organisms so that they can recover gas that's relatively free of those corrosive and toxic gases that are the souring agents of these gas streams. With time, as these organisms are, as time goes on, a few years, those biocides degrade, they're no longer in the system, and so these microorganisms then can regrow and then be generators of hydrogen sulfide that can have the potential to come up through those wells from deep underground, and then when it encounters things like iron or it will dissolve it, it's a highly corrosive compound. When it mixes with aerobic water or becomes hydrated, it can generate into sulfuric acid and other components of acid mine drainage and dissolve away cement liners or, you know, really speed up that whole process. And then entering into our domestic water sources and the aquifers, that's the end of the story for this region as a viable, hospitable place for human life. I mean, then we're suffering.
Could I ask you something, Yuri? I mean, am I right or wrong by saying that there's a good chance then that a leak from one of these places where the gas is dumped out and comes down the hillside and down into a low valley area, can it or can they not wipe out a whole street? I mean, if it's
the thing is about those, in particular the hive, we're very sensitive to it. We can smell molecules of it because it's so toxic. It's when it overwhelms us and we don't smell it, then we don't have much longer to live. And so this is a highly toxic gas, and I have to say that one of the big concerns in the waste holding ponds, you know, that they have with the fluids in them that have sulfate in them, one of the really big issues is the activity of these sulfate-reducing bacteria to generate hydrogen sulfide just in, like, you have to aerate water treatment system so it doesn't produce methane. You know, that's why you have big aerators. The problem is, of course, aerating toxic chemicals is problematic because then you aerosolize them and spread them all over the place. So chemical additives to keep those organisms at bay in these holding ponds, they must be added to stop the generation of hydrogen sulfide. Now, I was driving around West Virginia my first trip down, and actually it was not in December, it was in March of this year. And I drove around some of those hollows up GCMP Road and down, and I could smell when I was below one of those holding ponds because I'm quite, I know what that thing smells like. I work with it all the time.
Yuri, we smell it every day, my friend. It's a new smell to all of us living here as well.
It's everywhere, right? I mean, it's not like somebody burning coal. This is a particular rotten egg smell, and that stuff is toxic. Sure, the acute exposure is toxic at higher concentrations. Longer-term exposure, it affects respiration. It binds to your hemoglobin and iron in your heme structure. It's a terrible toxic material, gas. And it is things, I think, that there is still an administrative stay on the monitoring of hydrogen sulfide from industrial processes, but there was recent suggestion by the Environmental Protection Agency to have that stay lifted. I may be wrong about that, but that is something that I recently heard. But I have to say, as a concerned scientist, that is one of those chemicals that we must monitor, because Ed is absolutely right. If it falls down into a low-lying area that's populated, you could have massive kills in that area.
And most of those low-lying areas, like Ed, and we can all agree, we have roots here. We know this terrain. We know down in those low-lying areas there's either an announced population or an unannounced population. Or it's a location for, say, the four-wheelers and all that other stuff. I can't imagine Gia sitting on the other end of these four lines and saying, holy cow, if everybody knows about this, if Ed's up in Jefferson County, I'm here in Ohio County, Yuri's coming back to where he grew up in Bethany, taking trips through the hollers and everything else, why aren't folks hollering about this? Simple answer.
Isn't that what we're doing right now?
It's a simple answer. Greed. Okay, everybody that has a lease contract, they're hush-hush because they want to keep earning their money because they're waiting for the royalties. The owners of small and big businesses profiting from this increase, this influx of out-of-state workers in the campgrounds and the filled-up hotels, they're making out, so they're going to stay quiet. Anybody making a buck off this industry is going to stay silent, and the industry makes sure that that reach extends to the cities, to the counties, with contributions to this festival and that festival. They're trying to advertise on all media, whether it's TV, radio, and they're all over the newspaper. It's the reach that they have manipulated through, of course, something called human nature, greed, gluttony. And that's why
you're
not hearing
the
clamor.
One thing that they ought to all remember, and maybe take a look at, when you go into the western part of the United States, there are many, many towns that are oil boom towns. Now, I don't know what they look like now, but I remember seeing them just, it was maybe 5 years after that bubble burst, and they built workers out, and they shut down a lot of operations, and these towns had built huge trailer parks, apartment complexes, malls, big shopping centers, and it was, everybody was gone.
That's right.
And you're looking at this trailer park that once held 10,000 trailers, and there's 10 trailers in it. The shopping mall has nothing in it, nothing to buy, nothing to sell, nobody. You know, and so this greed that they're feeling is relatively short-lived. They're
going they don't care about
their
that,
kids,
Gia. They care about the mirror's reflection. They care about today because this area...
It's 5 or 10 years. You know,
well, this area has been economically desperate since the Rust Belt started rusting. Okay, you're talking about a lot of 2-acre or 200-acre farms that haven't been farmed in 20 years that all of a sudden is generating funds. You've got a lot of people with those kind of parcels of land who are going ahead and signing the leases and letting them drill. Meanwhile, they're packing up the farmhouse and they're going to Hollywood. I mean, that story is alive and well here in the Upper Ohio Valley on both sides of that Ohio River.
If I can interject here for 1 second, I think, you know, what's happening here, too, is they're not being fully informed. I've attended many, many of these gas meetings where they come in and they sell themselves in conjunction. And they do it like here in Ohio. They do it through the Ohio State Extension Office and the Farm Bureau. They get together and they come in and they sell this industry. And I've repeated to them, I've repeated to my county commissioners and my elected representatives, I said, look, if you're going to come in and sell something to the people, tell them the whole story. Tell them the facts. Tell them, like, for the things I was finding out. Some of the things like with Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac. You know, it spells out in their mortgages that you're not allowed to store or do anything that can harm the environment or store hazardous materials on it. They're not telling people out there that when they sign a gas lease that you're also going into business with that oil and gas industry. So, therefore, if the neighbor doesn't lease, and his well water gets ruined, or his way of life gets disturbed, he not only sues the gas company, but he sues the individual landowner, because he's a silent partner in that business. They don't tell them this.
And well, they don't have to, Ed, because the federal government exempted them from any of those liabilities back in 2005.
No. I could show cases where I could show right now where individual farmers in Pennsylvania and even in Ohio, people who sign oil and gas leases, and those oil and gas leases cause damage to the surrounding landowners who did not lease, they can be held just as much
liable. I understand. Ed, the leaseholder can be held liable, but not the gas industry, thanks to the 2005 exemptions.
Well,
that's what I'm telling you. That's why the gas industry is not going to tell anybody that they're courting to sign a lease about the dangers involved, because the gas industry, the gas and oil industries have been exempted from a number of different things, like the Safe Drinking Water Act,
right,
the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act.
Hang on, Safe Drinking Water, because it's time for us to take a break. Folks, we're going to be back with more from all three of our guests about fracking and why the rest of us should care. So hang on. Take a look around the web, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with more conversation that's sure to interest you.
Hello, everyone. Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Come join us each Friday evening at A Global Focus's new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Welcome back to the Donna Shades. I'm Gia Scott, and tonight I'm being joined by Yuri Gorby, Ed Hashbarger, and Steve Novotny.
And hey, you did it that time.
I got it that time. I didn't get my tongue in a knot. I couldn't have a word for it, right? We're having a great conversation about fracking for oil and gas, as well as some cover-ups right here in America. So, guys, the one thing I wanted to make sure that we covered almost right away is, you know, a lot of people are thinking, okay, this is happening in the Ohio Valley, in Ohio and West Virginia, and I've never been there. Why should I care? Why should they care?
I'll go first real quick, and then these guys can get more technical. It's simple. Why should the rest of the people around the country care? Because of the federal exemptions that I mentioned, those are federal. That means that, you know, includes all 50 states, ladies and gentlemen, to things, again, like the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, and the National Environmental Policy Act. Those were all passed 2005 under the Bush/Cheney administration. We all know about Dick Cheney's connection to Halliburton, the hydraulic fracturing king of the world. The other reason is because the standards are being set now. This is a scientific experiment. We talked about it on the break, the panelists and Gia. That's what this is. The standards are being set now because hydraulic horizontal fracturing drilling is not something that this company or any company has done for a century, but that's what they'll tell you. That's why the rest of the country needs to care, because there's shale underneath every one of us. It's just a matter of time.
Well, you know, I thought before we get, well, you know, the two respond to, one thing that I would have mentioned is when I was doing my research and I talked to my oil guy, he said the same oil that's being drilled for, natural gas in New Mexico and southern Colorado is part of the same gas and oil system that runs clear from Colorado to Pennsylvania, where it bubbles up in the ground there, as well as bubbling up to the ground level in some places in the Rocky Mountains. So if you think that what they're doing in West Virginia and Ohio doesn't affect you, you know, if you're in the United States and you drink water, it probably does.
But that's what I'd like to comment on. You asked how it affects everybody, Gia. Fresh water. Everybody knows if you look at the aquifer maps for the continental United States, we have fresh water that's slowly but surely being depleted across the country. And when you dump 5 million gallons of fracked fluid laced with all these deadly chemicals and you stick them into the earth, it's contaminating the aquifer systems all across this country. In Ohio, we have moderate drought situations. Yes, we've had some severe storms roll through, but we have creeks and streams. I can speak on my farm alone. I have a spring that's completely dried. You have a spring creek that's dried completely up. And when you're dealing with all these various things with as far as no fresh water coming down, there's one thing I've learned in the Marine Corps, and every veteran out there probably knows this firsthand, in their survival training. You can only go tops 3 days if you're in great condition without water. Most people 2 days without water. And when all this fresh drinking water gets contaminated, we have nothing else to drink. There's a report out of Colorado. Colorado's farms planning for dry spell, losing auction bids for water for fracking projects. In Colorado, farms in Colorado are losing out because how the farmers and ranchers there get their fresh water for their crops and their cattle is by going to an auction. It's allocated water set aside to be bidded out to the highest bidder. Well, when you get the oil and gas companies coming in like they do with their billions and billions of dollars, they outbid the local farmer, and he has no water for his crops, no water for his cattle, and the indirect effect is less food at the marketplace, less crops at the marketplace. That's the same thing we're going to start seeing here in Ohio over the next few years, because you have even people here, I got other reports here where people say that they can no longer claim themselves as organic farmers anymore, because from the drill sites and the particulate matter and the radium 226 and 228 that comes down from the drill sites that coats the farmland that's causing the cows to be sick, losing their cows, chickens, pigs, so on and so forth. Their waters, I got reports in here where people, they can't even water their cattle because the water's contaminated. So how is this going to affect across the country? Fresh water, folks. Fresh water. We're not going to have fresh water because it's all being contaminated. This is not a scare tactic. Look at it yourself. Look at the reports that's coming out from the federal government. We don't have all the fresh water that we used to have here anymore. And that's where it's going to affect everybody, from California to New York and everybody in between.
Well, you know, I kind of live at the bottom end of many tributaries, including the Mississippi River, which dumps into the Gulf of Mexico, not all that far from where I live. You know, the Mississippi River is already notorious for carrying all kinds of agricultural chemicals and chemicals left over from people's medicine. They've flushed down their toilets and has ultimately ended up in the river as well. You know, and that's just a small portion of the potential contamination that we could see. It doesn't include all the groundwater. You guys are talking about losing springs and entire aquifers potentially being contaminated. You know, some of these islands contain vast amounts of water that took millions of years to accumulate. Can we really afford to risk it for some cheap natural gas?
Well, they keep bringing the oil out of the ground without much care of what happens underneath the ground, without the oil being where the oil was before they brought it out of the ground. I mean, Gary, you know, seriously, how much do we know about the center of the earth? I mean, the journey to the center of the earth was only a movie and a bad sequel, right? I mean, the science is really kind of undetermined because we really don't know where faults are or where all the faults are and everything else, correct?
Yeah.
Well, you know, with regard to the deep subsurface, there are groups of scientists, and I work with them personally. They are involved in deep drilling activities in the ocean basins. But their search is not for oil. It's for the extent of life, like how far do these bacteria actually permeate into our Earth. And so they are drilling down 5 and 6 kilometers starting at the bottom of the ocean. It's a fantastic international effort to find out more about life and its development on Earth. The results are published in scientific journals, and it's a fascinating area. You all should get into it and study it.
Well, I love hearing about the exploration of what's under the water instead of what's in space. I mean, I'm cool with going to Mars and all that, but I really do think we should know all our own planet before we rape it of all its fossil fuels without knowing the true impact of raping it of all its fossil fuels.
Well, the real frontier is the wonder and the beauty of this miraculous thing that we call Gaia. You know, how this integrated system with all of its processes has come to give birth to this. Believe it as one may believe or not. There is also a scientific method that can be applied to understand it that will bring people together, not separate them, but allow us. I mean, my faith comes from my investigation of science, of natural processes. This is a wonderful world, but we won't have the opportunity to realize or explore that if we make the gas layer that is around this planet inhospitable to us, which is happening, and it is unmonitored. Why should people of not just of this country or people that live above a shale formation be concerned about it? Because this should concern the entire world, because the amount of methane, one of the least valuable components of those gas stream or the gases that are being extracted from the Earth, is being ejected into the atmosphere. Because of that 2005 Energy Policy Act, it does not have to be monitored. So those releases are not, there's no evaluation of how much is escaping into our atmosphere. There are a couple studies now, the one in Colorado, that show that even the industry's own emissions was 2 or 3%, but it looks like in this one Colorado study, 8 to 10% of the methane is escaping to our atmosphere. Now, we must be concerned about that because methane is a very active greenhouse gas, and if we don't monitor its emissions, then our best international climate models have no chance of being accurate because they have faulty data to work with. It's that simple. And so the world must become aware of the effect of this particular technology, horizontal hydraulic fracturing, that in multiple countries has been put by law, it is unregulated, not in just the United States, but in Australia, in countries around the world, and I would guess in China as well, that this will be a large contributor to a destructive gas to our atmosphere, and if we don't get it under control here with the people that invented the technology, then it will get out of our hand, and the world will make it basically, we will exterminate ourselves ultimately. I believe, as a scientist, that's my belief.
Listening to the comments about all this methane, I'm thinking it sounds like, you know, personally, I try to not make unnecessary trips, to not use more energy than what I really need to use to be reasonably comfortable and so forth and so on, and reduce my greenhouse footprint, you might say. And it sounds like I'm kind of wasting my efforts because, you know, even a single well can release more greenhouse gases than I may do in my lifetime.
Well, we all must remember that
how does it compare to a car? I don't know the science behind, you know, how you measure these greenhouse gases and how methane being released in the atmosphere compares to the output in, say, a relatively inefficient older car. But I'm thinking, you know, we might be putting more crap in the atmosphere before the gas even gets to our car than we'll ever put in with our car.
Absolutely. And what is happening right now, and you'll see this develop more and more, is that the industry is colluding. Let's say, for instance, Shell Chemical is working with Honda to develop a fleet of natural gas vehicles that will burn clean and everybody will be happy at the consumer's end. But if the only way that is really feasible, and what they're attempting to do, is generate their own market to raise the demand and hence the value of their product so that they can keep this pipeline flowing. And if it is unregulated or if there are no constraints on them to protect the public from the effects of the extraction, then that pipeline will flow, and we will all, the people out in L.A. will say, oh, aren't these cars great? While the people back in Wetzel County would be like choking on the emissions from the extraction. So, you know, we have to look at that whole system.
Could I say something on this? When we're talking about the production of the oil and gas that's supposedly coming out of our ground here, we need to keep in mind, because I see it here, and I'm sure Steve sees it, there, down where he's at here in West Virginia. But here in Ohio, I watch them frack a well, have their flare off or burn off, and then cap it. Because the money's not there in the market right now for that gas. So they spend all this time fracking this well, dumping all this stuff into the earth, burning it off and burning all those chemicals into the environment. Then they cap it because the market is not there for what they're producing out of those wells. That's why they're hoping to tap more into the Utica Shale for the butanes, and so on and so forth. But I asked everybody out there who's listening right now, we've had gas drilling going on, at least in our area and here, and I'll have reports here that was done out of the Columbus Dispatch, that they've been doing fracking here since 2001, roughly, here in Ohio, and producing oil and producing various gases out of these wells here. And our gas prices at the pump and our heating costs have not gone down. They have not gone down. And if you look into it closely, the oil and stuff that they're producing here, when you ask the question about the oil and gas that they're producing here, and this question was posed to Chesapeake at one of our meetings, a farmer said that the reason he signed his gas lease is because he was under the understanding that some of that gas was going to stay here in our valley to help reduce the heating cost. And the gentleman said, look, all the gas we're producing here is going to Canada. We can make more money off of it by sending it to Canada. So again, here in our area and other places the gas producing is taking place, we have to deal with the ill effects to our soil, water, and air while other people benefit what's produced here in our area and other places that's currently on right now. So they're not being honest with the people. They're not being honest with them at all. And again, like I said, if you look at the oil and gas prices here, it hasn't gone down since they've been drilling, and they're producing quite a bit here. But their philosophy is once it starts to produce, cap it, hold it off until the markets come back and demand, and they can get higher money for their product. That's what's happening. And don't even get me started about the processing facilities where they process this fuel app. That's horrible in itself, and I'm sure Yuri can speak a little bit more on that.
Well, that seems, I mean, the whole deal with the compressor stations and the cracker, you know, the steam crackers and everything, that's, you've been covering that for some time now, correct, in the area?
Who, me? Or Steve?
No,
definitely. I mean, I've been covering the industry for more than 4 years now in the beginning, Yuri and everyone. People thought I was a little crazy, but, you know, one of the reasons why I started covering it on the radio and in print media was because a lot of my friends, a lot of my family were having their doors knocked on and all were having contracts thrown at them. And they immediately called me and said, hey, what do you know about this? And when I didn't know a whole lot about it, I went and found out about it. And now I believe everybody here in the Upper Ohio Valley understands why I started covering it, why I did, and why not only do I give it a lot of airtime during my regular radio show on WKKX, but I'm willing to do shows like this just to get the word out, because again, we're the testing grounds. It's almost as if you know, when the federal government wanted to test their bombs, they went to Nevada's deserts because it just didn't matter. Well, it seems as if the new scientific experiment is being done right here, and we're not sure that we matter, or if we're even in the way, or even if we have a say.
Yeah, there is one thing I want to comment on when you were, inferring. I know you were doing it nicely, Steve, and you had best intentions, but one thing that I've learned from those of my friends and family who actually did leave thinking olefically, it's not, environmentally destructive. It will bring resources and jobs to this area.
Oh, yeah.
But now because there was a propaganda machine finally honed that was set loose on our friends and family back there and literally left defenseless. And
right.
Then there was the psychological effect of that as they realized that, no, this is not what I was told, but, it still is providing some profit, and I have signed this non-disclosure or agreement where I can't talk about it. But these things affected them over that next couple of years, and now the regret is so deep and the guilt even that they are it's difficult for them to talk about it. And this is one thing, at least, that I want to do, is to reach out to those people and to help use my science knowledge and my friends that are also knowledgeable in this area to describe to them what is not only happened and is happening, but what is likely to happen in the future and the things that we have to prepare for. Gas mask is something that people in low-lying areas, I would recommend that people have gas masks for an accident or really save your life. That's just the way it is.
Well,
oxygen bottles, the techniques to apply them, those are things that we might have to be dealing with in this next couple of years as this develops further.
But the sad thing in all this is where's the honor? Where's the honor in our politicians? As a Marine and as a cop, when I wore my uniforms, I wore with keeping in mind that I'm protecting and serving the people of my state, my community, or my country. I always had the best interest at heart. When these politicians go either to the state government or our local governments or the federal government, they need to keep in mind that they're wearing a uniform of the Constitution. They got to be there to represent the people. And when things like this happen, when they allow industry to come in and not tell the truth and bulldog people over, it's a dereliction of duty. I know as a cop, if I did not do my job, I could be cited for dereliction of duty. If in the Marine Corps, if I didn't do my job, I could be brought up on office hours. Our politicians need to be held accountable for not keeping the best interest of the people at heart. Instead, they worry about their re-election campaign, how to line their own pockets, or how to benefit them with a job after they leave office with one of these big companies. And it's just wrong. And I'm hoping that through the effort of Steve and Yuri, myself, Gia, all of us out there, Donna Devane, all of us, we can get the word out to these people. And I hope that people turn into my radio show, Lost America, because we're going to be covering these topics. The responsibility of our elected officials, the responsibility and the morality and the moral right of businesses to do what's right by the people. And they just aren't doing it. And people, like Steve was saying earlier, this area, our area especially, the depressed area, so people see money and they jump on it and they don't think about 6 months down the road or a year down the road. And it's frightening. It's frightening because those are the people who are going to be the first ones to scream when a serious health issue comes on to them due to the fracking situation in the area. They're going to find out when they can't sell their homes, because let's be honest, everybody listening here today, and even us talking, who wants to go buy a home with a gas rig in the backyard, pluming out all this radon 226 and 228 and chemicals and the silica and all that stuff in the drilling process? Who wants to hear that whistling and the egg smell from the gas being produced or leaking out, fizzing out through that? Who wants their water wells contaminated? Nobody's going to want to buy a piece of land that's trashed due to the oil and gas industry, because all they wanted to do was come in and rape us. And this is coming from a Republican here, folks. I am so, so upset about how my fellow Republicans have sold me out down the road so they can line their pockets or get reelected or have something lined up for themselves. Again, this is a country for the people, by the people. and our politicians are supposed to be wearing the uniform of the Constitution to defend us, to defend us from big business, to defend us from harmful things that happen in the environment to, due to industry or even the, our own government. So it really saddens my heart. It really does. And I do thank people like Steve out there who's been fighting this battle for a while, but now you got a friend in arms here, buddy.
Well, I appreciate that, that's what it takes.
We're quick to point fingers at the politicians, but we need to remember who some, and that is the voters. And we've all, you know, heard about cases or even seen it, you know, happening where even an elected official who is under indictment for taking bribes and so forth and so on, or other illegal activities, has been reelected even after this videotapes of their accepting the bribe or whatever, doing whatever illegal activity, have been aired on national TV, still being reelected. That's the voters' fault.
Well, I mean, with basically special interest groups now and big business being able to fund huge campaigns, that media, the psychological effect is effective. You can sell it to a number, a sufficient number of the population to meet the numbers to get those people elected. And you have other ways to do it. I mean, lots of these are the meetings, the town meetings that people have, and maybe not directly with the politicians, but what the politicians are saying are in line with what the industry is saying they're bringing into the region. $100 check to go to come to a meal, for instance, and listen to this, or come to a nice dinner to listen to how beautiful this industry can, what a savior it is for everyone in that area. People are influenced, and they will vote toward that. That's how that machine works. And so, again, I would take it away from the voters' fault and say that we have to look at what's being levied against those the public to influence their perceptions so that they will vote in a particular way. I think that is happening, and we hear about it at the federal level every day now. I just want to echo one more thing because I think my phone is going to run out of power here, that Steve said that this is a national problem. It is a federal government that lifted the regulations to protect the environment and human health, and allow this industry to proceed forward unregulated, that we need to address. And there is I think you all may have heard about it. If you have not, it's the Stop the Frack rally in D.C. It's July 28th, and the Sierra Club is organizing a number of buses that are leaving from Morgantown, Pittsburgh, number of places around the state. So check out the Sierra Club, especially the West Virginia Sierra Club's website. And then this is something that we need to bring to the federal government and also to the nation at large with a big demonstration that shows that this is, as it's being practiced, an unsafe practice, an unsafe industry. Now, I have to say I'm not completely against oil and gas drilling or even coal mining for reasonable purposes, but those are all local. Those will support the people that pull it out of the ground and their state and local economies. I support that because it could be done in a responsible way, I believe. However, when the product is being sold to other countries or being even sold across the country, like the coal industry has done with mountaintop removal to fire up Las Vegas and Los Angeles and places out west that have no concept of the consequences of leaving their lights just having these, you know, huge consumption of this cheap energy, that is irresponsible use, and I am fully against it. But I support oil and gas drilling and even coal mining for local use, local power generation, which stimulates our economy so that we don't have to be poor dumb hoopies living down in the hills of West Virginia. And we're not dumb, by the way, but we are hoopies.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, it's a really complex issue. And, you know, you see so much crazy stuff that you wonder, you can't help but wonder as a citizen looking at these things, you know, how much of it is scare stories, how much of it is sheer nonsense, and how much of it is real? Because
well, ask me a question. No. Ask me a question, Gia. Ask Ed a question. We're living in the middle of it.
Well, you know, the deal is that, you know, I understand that these heavy trucks are destroying streets and roads that were not designed to carry them.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Gia. Those companies will tell you that they're going to repave those roads, and they do repave those roads. And all of a sudden, everyone, hey, look, they've repaved these roads twice as thick as what the state road would have done. Wow, we're really making out. No, we're not. It's doubling the size of the ditches alongside of the road. And a common car, if it is run off the road or runs off the road by itself, goes into one of those twice as big ditches, the common car, like my Ford Focus, can't get back out of them. But guess what can? Those industry trucks.
In the line what you're saying about the trucks, you know, a lot of people don't realize if to go to an average rig site, for the Marcellus Shell, going in there for each hole that they frack is anywhere from 900 to 1,100 trucks in and out for that one frack well.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Until it's fracked. And then, in many cases, now West Virginia is a little different because I understand that they have open retainment pits there, and so does Pennsylvania, but Ohio doesn't. With that water, it's got to leave there, and they do recoup a good bit of that water coming out of the ground. They do recoup it and refilter it, and they try to reuse the site. Again, you know, and I want people to understand, maybe I didn't clarify myself at the beginning. I have no problem with the oil and gas industry if they do it correctly. And I don't understand the big rush. Me and Yuri had talked about this probably a couple months ago, that we need to put a moratorium on gas drilling right now and just do a 5 to 10 year study on the current sites that are currently operating to see what the environmental impact's going to be.
But you can't do that, Ed. You can't do that. That would be against the law. What you can do is get rid of the federal exemptions, again granted in 2005, and make these businesses do it as responsibly as they know they can. It's all about the profit margin. You can put a moratorium on it only if the federal government puts a timeline on it, because you've got to abide by the Constitution. You know, 5 to 10 years, totally unconstitutional. It's quite simple. Our lawmakers, since that's the topic now, our lawmakers need to take another look at that long list of exemptions that I read and reconsider the exemptions. If they do that, all of a sudden, the industry's got to go about it as responsibly as what the coal mining and coal-fired burning power plants are being forced into these days, and one of the major reasons why our steel industry is dead here and why we're part of the Rust Belt.
Well, you know, in Ohio, and it's a little different, like I said, there in West Virginia, our politicians have put in place some laws that are more stringent on the industry. But for the most part, it benefits the industry. And some of the things that they've done here alone to help out the industry, like a lot of people don't realize this. The groundwater, like on my farm and other people's farms, the groundwater here was taken out of the hands of the EPA and put under ODNR.
Yep.
The Ohio Department of Natural Resources. It was put in their hands in the section that pertains to oil and gas drilling. And a lot of people don't realize this, that in that section of the ODNR that handles the oil and gas drilling, that handles monitoring of my groundwater in case it is contaminated, half of their budget, or part of their budget, I should say part of their budget, is on the number of permits they issue to the oil and gas industry. So, I mean, they say they monitor the situation here, but they don't. Another perfect example of our politicians here bending over to the oil and gas industry. Instead of creating laws to safeguard our fresh water in situations here, we have a situation going on in Yellow Creek that's in Jefferson County. And the oil and gas industry goes over there and they pump out as much water as they want. Now, technically, they're only supposed to take out roughly 100,000 gallons of water a day. So when I questioned ODNR about who monitors that, it's on the honor system. The oil and gas industry can come in and they just need to report to us at the end of the year how much they took.
And what about the water take legislation for Lake Erie, Ed?
That's another whole topic to itself.
It is. 1 million gallons per day per company granted a permit from Lake Erie alone.
And you know what? I have a monthly report, from Ohio. It's the monthly water inventory report for Ohio. And I'm going down through and looking at the precipitation for the severity index. And pretty much the whole state is under a drought index. Only two places on it have positive water, and it's 0.1 in positive precipitation to make up for the difference. The rest of us are in serious, moderate to severe drought situations, but yet, through our politicians, through legislation, allows the oil and gas industry to go in and pump out of our lakes, creeks, and streams, and who cares how much water they take? Fresh water that resupplies people's farmlands. Ohio does have stringent laws, but when you start rifling through these legislations and giving the oil and gas industry a clear slate, and I'll just touch on this real quick. I know we're going to change pace here a little bit, but mandatory pooling in the state of Ohio, as Steve said, West Virginia doesn't have that, but Ohio does. And this law was created to benefit the oil and gas industry. So for people like myself who do not want to lease my mineral rights, they can come in and take it from me under this law. And what happens is an oil company tries to obtain my mineral rights through good faith, they say, by offering me X amount of dollars per acre to lease and then certain amount in royalties. If I don't want to give that up, they petition ODNR to take my mineral rights. And so I have to go in front of what's called a technical advisory council. And that technical advisory council is made up of 8 members. And those people there are going to determine whether I get to keep, mind you, I get to keep my minerals, or it goes to a private business for profit. Out of the 8 members, 6 of those members are from the oil and gas industry, 1 is for royalty interest, and 1 represents civilian interest, or the people in the community's interest. And I always ask people, how do you get a fair shake if you're going in front of a committee and 8 and 6 of the 8 members are from the oil and gas industry? And if they rule against you, you can appeal it to a committee of 3 members, and those 3 members are from the oil and gas industry. So this is an example of what our politicians have set up to benefit the oil and gas industry. Instead of having an independent commission determine mineral rights. And again, I do believe that that's unconstitutional. Nobody should be determined whether I get to keep my minerals, especially since I pay my taxes, I own my land, I serve my country, I was born as a U.S. citizen, so I deserve, I earned, I own, it's mine. But
it's the equivalent of eminent domain over property above the ground, Ed. That's what they say, because it is an energy issue. It is for public use. And when they do those kinds of things, they've got to show that enough of a percentage of the product will be sold domestically, not locally, but domestically. And that's how they get away with forced pulling.
Well,
that is a huge issue in the state of Ohio, Ed. You've nailed it straight on the head. In West Virginia, that was a make-or-break issue with the legislature and a whole lot of citizens of the Mountain State. And in that case, while falling short in other areas, as far as forced pulling is concerned, the citizens of West Virginia won that war.
Well, there is a difference, though, because a lot of people do get that confused with eminent domain.
Thing via minerals that are property rights.
Right, but what they're saying is there's no statute, at least I've been able to find, that says my mineral rights is for the common good. And, it has been brought up in arguments that I've made with politicians, because politicians will say, it's not right that you don't lease your minerals, because now all the people around you who did lease now can't reap the benefits because you're holding out. And then I tell them, I say, well, then you tell me, you show me the scales of liberty where these people have more constitutional rights than me. We don't want to start going down that road to determine who has more civil liberties than the next person.
Well, maybe they're forming a mini-democracy along the same area of comparable sales that go into the worth of our houses went up for sale.
It sounds entirely like it's a nationwide problem that we see where corporations seem to have more rights as an individual than people do. And it's not just the oil industry. I mean, we see it here on the Gulf Coast with all of chemical companies. But you see where the corporation's needs and wants and profit margin matters more than that of an individual. They seem to have more pull in terms of not only federal lawmaking, but in states as well.
Well, I mean, the Citizens United case. The Citizens United case, gee, I hate to cut you off, but the Citizens United case upheld by the United States Supreme Court is a perfect example. You know, the argument is now being, again, debated whether freedom of speech is a collective right or an individual right. According to the Citizens United case, it's a collective right, and it gives it to corporate America, something that's not really owned by America anymore. So, you know, it's all around us. I make fun on my radio show that the newest invention in America will be the basement patio. And that is because of what we're finding out about federal approval of the use of drones, not only by government, not only by, you know, public employed government, but also by CRCA and commercialism. So they can manipulate us even more. I sure wish to go back. I'm sure Ed remembers. I'm sure Yuri remembers. And I'm sure you do as well, G. I'd like to go back to when we watched the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade, and that's when Mom and Dad actually threw the Sears Roebuck catalog in front of you and said, all right, what do you want for Christmas?
I want to go back to support one thing you said, Steve, that you're absolutely right. The target that we should have to avoid all of these like local or state government issues and corruption that are developing is to target that 2005 Energy Policy Act and those list of exemptions explicitly for this horizontal slick water hydraulic fracturing and get those, revisit those and have those revised. The problem that we have there is, of course, that in January, President Obama basically gave an advertisement for the industry saying how great it is, and we are betting our future economic growth, if that do get some growth, on that energy policy. And so we have to then start to revise how is this what are the economic implications for everyone in the United States, because the current administration has bought into this as one of those paths. And I want to make one other point, going back to Josh Fox, because I don't want to say the wrong thing about him, that he may have exaggerated or maybe even slightly misrepresented or didn't have all the facts together when he did Gasland 1, but he brought the attention of enough people, he collected the attention of enough people to at least get focused on that 2005 Energy Policy Act. And I think we'll clean up some of his stuff here in his next Gasland 2, but we'll see when that comes out. But I just didn't want to say anything negative against him without also saying that he did something positive for the whole movement or realization.
I agree with you, Yuri, and you know, I know that whether it was off the air or on the air, I did make the comment, man, I just wish Josh would have gotten his facts straight in Gasland, because we all know in my business, in the journalism business, that especially when you do radio journalism 3 hours a day and you're live and on the air, have your facts straight, because callers are going to call you out. You know, we can be called hoopies or whatever here in the Upper Ohio Valley, but we're pretty smart people. And each and every day I'm presented the intelligence of this valley, and I appreciate that, and I let my listeners know that all the time. Josh and Gasland, you know, it came out. It intrigued everybody. I talked about it. I'm sure that everybody else talked about it, whether it was at the dinner table or around the water cooler. And then, unfortunately, it came out that some of the incidents that he cited within the documentary were actually the results of other things. I'm looking forward to Gasland, too, because you're right, Yuri. He did wake a lot of people up. I know he woke me up. He allowed me to see, you know, again, at the top of the show, I said I think too many people were concentrating on fracking. You know, Gasland really was a great expose on the entire industry and its operation, and it allowed me to look into other areas, such as the ditches and the twice-thick pavement, that example that I presented just a little bit ago. You know, I'm looking forward to Gasland, too. I'm sure the young man has learned his lesson. I'm sure that, too, makes him a veteran. And I know everybody here in the Upper Ohio Valley, you know, from Jefferson County and up into the Youngstown area all the way down to Tyler County, they're looking forward to this because the distribution lines, ladies and gentlemen, are now being laid. And most people are being silent because they're making money off this industry in one shape or form. I'm thankful other people are able to talk about it and open their mouths like Ed, and I hear him trying, so I'm going to shut up now.
Well, I agree, because I see the webbing that is occurring here in our area as far as them tying in these various rig sites and the pipelines going all over Carroll County. It's just unbelievable the amount of pipelines they're putting in up there. And, you know, a lot of farmers don't realize this, that when they put these pipelines in, if they come across your fields, you can't grow crop on either side or underneath it. Allow you to do anything with that section of land. And to go a little bit further, what everybody was talking about here as far as Gasland and stuff, that's one thing that I try to do as a retired police officer, is I try to gather the facts, the stuff that I'm talking about tonight, and I'll be talking about on my show on Awaken Radio, is I gather the facts from credible news agencies, firsthand reports from the government agencies, ODNR itself, and even if I can run into those things from the oil and gas industry, I try to present all of it to you. You decide what you want to do with that information. People need to start getting educated about what's happening here. And Steve's right. It's just not about fracking. It's about other issues. It's about our local economy. There's a lot of jobs. I have a report that was put on by the Ohio State University and the Department of Labor in Pennsylvania from 2004 to 2010 during a 6-year period. 23,000 jobs were created either directly or indirectly in the whole state of Pennsylvania. You know, told here locally that hundreds of thousands of jobs are going to be created. Hundreds of thousands of jobs. And now all those jobs that were in Pennsylvania are now moving into Ohio and West Virginia. And it's sad that, you know, that they have to sell an industry by giving false hope. It's just wrong.
Yeah, and the employment industry is huge, guys. I mean, you know, we've got a number of people in the Upper Ohio Valley needing jobs, ex-steel workers, you know, this, that, and whomever. And they're not getting hired. Initially, we're told that we're a bunch of druggies and nobody can pass a drug test. Well, that's false. Organized labor members of all locals here up and down the Upper Ohio Valley have to take a drug test before they work, period. We're not a bunch of druggies. Granted, we have a prescription pill problem just like everybody else has a drug problem in their area. But we're not a bunch of druggies. They don't want to hire locally. Because if they bring out of state workers, those folks, their wives aren't friends with our wives. They're not members of the PTA. They don't join our fraternals, and they don't go to church with us. That way, we don't pay out their day on the well pad. And that's a conspicuous thing taking place right here. I understand some people are getting truck driving jobs. That's a good thing because at least we know the roads around here. Some people are getting associated jobs, fine and dandy. But I do know that local companies have been locked out of bid projects and everything else. And that's ridiculous. And that leads everybody to believe the worst and fear the worst because we're not told anything else right here in the middle of the sweet spot.
I think jobs nationwide are a big, big issue right now. I know people that have been unemployed for over a year, lots of people. And, you know, granted, Mississippi is one of these depressed states, but the coast is supposed to be the best area in terms of employment, and yet these people are not finding jobs. And these are people that have been able to find jobs easily all along. So that's a big, big deal when you're trying to sell people on an idea, is that whole job thing.
Sure, and you know what? Gee, I got to tell you, the people of West Virginia love the people of Mississippi. And over again, every time a national study or a national survey comes out, we have full appreciation for everybody down in Mississippi. You want to know why?
Why? We always come out worse.
We're 49th, and you're always 50th.
Yeah, well,
thanks a lot. We love y'all.
Mississippian, but, you know, I like to see the area I'm living in have opportunities for people. And I've discovered, you know, in this house hunting thing, there are entire towns in this state that have no high-speed internet access. And it may be the county seat and have the only high school in the county.
We have counties like that here in West Virginia as well.
How can these kids be educated? They don't even know what the world is like yet, you know?
I know. And yeah. Here in West Virginia.
Guys, we are running out of time. And so, you know, real quick, if you want to leave anybody with last thoughts.
I would just like to say one thing, that my show comes on Wednesday. First night for me is going to be July 4th on awakenradio.net. It's called Lost America, and we'll be talking about what we talked about, covering many, many topics, especially dealing with fracking in the industry in our area, corrupt businesses or big businesses coming in and buying out our politicians and the government's influence. So please join me Wednesday, every Wednesday from 6 to 8 on Awaken Radio.
Okay. Steve, you got anything to say?
Thanks for having me, gee, I really appreciated it, and I'm going to listen to Ed's show, and I recommend everybody else does too. If you live locally, of course you know who I am already. I'm on KKX. Listen to me every day, 3 to 6.
Okay, and are you still with us, or did your phone die?
No, I'm still here, and I just wanted to say that, first of all, I really appreciate the opportunity to contribute to this panel discussion, and I do believe that radio and internet radio, this medium, is a good one for basically raising the awareness of the public so that they can make informed decisions about this industry. And that there is a scientific community that has been funded by the U.S. Tax system. We're a publicly funded organization that was within the Department of Energy and beyond, and that if we given sufficient amount of the resources necessary, we can address the issues related to hydraulic fracturing and make this a at least provide some evaluation of risk assessment and maybe safe practices for extraction. But we need time to do that, resources, and all we're asking for is ban this for at least sufficient amount of time so we can conduct that research. Those gases have been in these formations for 350 million years. They'll sit there another 10. At the end of that 10 years, we'll have a better understanding of what we're doing to that system. So, again, thank you, Gia, for the opportunity to talk with you.
Great. Folks, write your congressmen and your senators and tell them, do this. And, you know, see how they respond. I have learned a lot about my politician or political representatives by sending them those emailed letters and getting their responses, and I have to say that I'm not going to vote for those people again. Do write to them. You know, say what's on your mind, and you're going to find out a lot about them in that process too, whether or not they're responsive to their constituents and how they respond. So, folks, I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight, and unfortunately, we've run out of time all too soon, as usual, but I hope that it's given everybody plenty of food for thought, as well as more illumination for their personal journey towards truth. Join us again next week as we continue our journey and hear about something else entirely different. It's sure to be another program that is just as thought-provoking. You've been listening to The Dawn of Shades, and I'm Gia Scott, and good night.
mysterious bubbles rising out of an Assumption Parish swamp. Officials are trying to figure what's causing